We are up to Mem Zayin Amud Aleph Halacha Beis. So it says, "Kem Shuhuna Tu Alpachas Yarba Amos." If you have if each individual vine was within 4 amos of each other, so that is less. There's a minimum share also. So if they're within 4 amos, that's too close together. So Reb Shimon says, "Eino Kerem." Therefore, it's not a Kerem, meaning that each vine only has halacha of 6 tefachim. It does not have the halacha. Even there could be 10 vines, it doesn't matter. They're all. It's not a vineyard. So therefore, the shear of Dalai Lamas does not apply, and they all have a lot of individual vines, and therefore, it is the rule would be 6 tefachim. Okay. Chacham Nerum Zaynam Beis. Chacham Manim Kerem. It is a Kerem. Vorin Esraim Tzayis Kilo Enam. We look at the middle ones as if they're not there. So in other words, looking at the picture in footnote 2, you could see what he's doing here. What he has here is he has all the vines are planted within 3 amas of each other. So what he's doing is he's taking out the ones which are at the 3 ama level. Then you have the vines at 6 amas apart, which is fine. Right? They could be anywhere from 4 to 16 amas, 4 to 8 amas apart. And if it's 3, if it's a Kerem Gadol, 4 to 16 amas apart. But in this case, it becomes 6 amas apart. And
in other words, they're not allowing you to undo the chumras of a Kerem by your poor planning or shtick.
He's removing, by removing the intervening rows will be 6 amas apart. And therefore, you will go ahead, and it will be a regular Kerem, okay? Now, let's see here.
He's not physically removing them, is he? He's just imagining them.
Right, it's not physical yet. I think the idea here is that it's obvious that they're going to have to be removed, so we look at them as if they already were removed, even though you haven't done so. But you're right, they haven't. He's just speaking in theory.
Why is it obvious?
Because they're too close together, they don't grow right. You're not going to leave it that way. Right? It says over here, the sages maintain one who overplants intends from the outset to uproot the intervening vines for firewood. That's what you're going to use them for. And the vines destined to be uprooted are considered as if they are already uprooted. Okay? Basically what it says. Let's see here. Yeah. Then he has an interesting note from the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish says that we've been assuming that if you were to uproot those intervening vines, that you would be within the shear. That means they're within 8 amas. But let's suppose if I uproot them, let's say they're 1, and then there's 1 at... Not 3 amas apart. Let's make it just short of. Let's see how I want to make it so that I want to make it. I'm trying to figure out what the case is exactly. He wants to make it so that if the Chazon Ish says, let me look at the brackets inside. The way he says it, there must be at least 4 amas between the remaining rows and less than 8 amas. Right. Now Chazon Ish says, even if there are more than 8 amas between the remaining rows, it's considered a vineyard since the intervening rows are not actually uprooted. They serve to join the other rows. So,
or are they not there? You can't have it both ways, right?
Yeah, Chazon Ish is having it both ways, right? He's saying Lamaisa, they are there, so they can act as a joiner, so that it's not considered as if they're too far apart. But at the same time, we look at it as if they're not there. I mean, it is a little interesting.
So I guess you can have your cake and eat it too.
Apparently, someone else came up with the same expression. So, yeah. So you can have your cake and eat it in this case. Okay. Let's go on. I'm going to have Shimon. So Shimon says, this is his argument, the Gemara. Harayne Karashal Karam. What he's saying to the Chacham is like this. What are you telling me, Chacham? You're telling me, oh, these ones which are too close together, you're going to uproot those. He says, which ones exactly are you going to uproot? Can you say vine number two you're going to uproot? Maybe vine number two you're not going to uproot, but vine number three you're going to uproot. Who? You have no way of telling me that this is the one for sure you're going to uproot. Well, you don't. His point is you don't know. Since you don't know which ones you're going to uproot, so then you have to leave them all alone and assume they're you look at them not as if they're uprooted because you don't know which one you're going to uproot. Right?
Meaning you have to uproot them eventually, or this is all imagined?
No, we're saying the Chachamim were imagining every other vine was going to be uprooted. But what is every other vine? Which vines are you referring to?
Odds or evens.
Odds or evens. So since you don't know, there's nothing forcing one over the other, so we leave it alone. We look at it, we have to leave it as
you
is.
You can't just say, oh, I would uproot that one, and I would uproot that one.
No, that doesn't work.
But because the farmers learned this Gemara,
that doesn't
so
work.
Therefore they would know which ones to uproot.
Here's in footnote 4. Since the owner did not designate any specific vines as the intervening ones, sounds like maybe if you would designate them, it would work. But anyway, but it's impossible to determine which vines stand to be uprooted and which function as the essence of the vineyard. Right. Okay, so that's it. That's Reb Shimon's taina. So keep that taina in mind, because that's going to be negeya what we're going to now say. So now we have a little machlokes here. Reb Hananya and Reb Mon are going to have an argument here. Reb Hananya hado omra. This rebuttal, in effect, is only going to make sense when you have six against six. Okay? So you have six vines and six vines. And we're trying to figure out which ones you're going to uproot. We don't know which one, so therefore, he has a valid argument. But if it was Chamesh Keneged Chamesh, if you had five vines planted against five vines, obviously 1, 3, and 5 are the ones you're going to keep, and 2 and 4 are the ones you're going to uproot. You're not going to uproot 1, 3, and 5, and leave 2 and 4. That doesn't make any sense. You're going to uproot the smaller number. So in that case, even Reb Shimon would agree that it is a vineyard, because his taina, his whole taina is, how do you know which ones to choose? Here it's obvious which ones to choose. That's where Hananya's, right? Then even Rav Shimon would agree with the Chacham. Rav Mona takes the opposite approach. This machlokes is kishoyu chamesh kenek chamesh. That's when there's a machlokes. If there's six against six, which ones are you going to decide? In other words, the Chachamim are going to agree with Reb Shimon in that case because you don't know. So here they're taking the opposite approach. The opposite, we're on 47b2. Mahu hadon desnina. What's the meaning of this in the Mishnah? It says, "Roinus ha'mtsayis kilo ena." What does the "mtsayis"? What does it mean? You look at the middle ones as if they're not there. Just to bring up some people who just walked in. So we're talking about a case where you have a crowded vineyard, and you have normally you have 4 amas space between each vine, but if you have very crowded, this is 1, 3, and 3, so if they're too close together, so it's a machlokas between Rav Shimon and the Chacham whether it's good or not. So Rav Shimon says it's not a good vineyard, and it has a halacha like yichidos, only 6 tefachim is necessary. And the Chacham say, "Roin eshaim tzayyoski lo enon." You look at the middle ones as if they don't exist. So what does that mean? It's as if they don't exist. So the Gemara says, "Amar Huna," listen to this kiddush that he says. It goes so far that you consider the vine as if it's not a vine. It's only there for firewood. And the vine is if it's ki'ilo eino mamish. You could take that vine and put it, that the extension, A branch. You take a branch of the vine and put it over tefuah. In other words, even though normally you can't put grapevine over tefuah, that answers it, right? Here, it's no problem because it's if it doesn't exist. It's amazing. It's an amazing. It's an amazing thing.
Grapes that don't exist.
You're gonna eat them. I don't know what bracha you make. Make a bracha on wood.
So then they'll never be kilayim.
What?
They'll never be kilayim.
What do you mean they'll never be kilayim?
If Tim says that there's kilayim, he's gonna kolom et le'aker ka'akordam. Hey, it's not there.
Over here, from the beginning, it's from the get-go. When it was growing, it wasn't growing as a vine.
It's not even looked at as an individual.
But I'm saying, if there is kilayim, he's gonna wanna rip it out, right? If there is kilayim, he's gonna wanna rip it out.
Yeah, but that's happening later. It had a halacha like a vine first. Now, it's different. It's different. Let's take a look.
What do you mean? These things were planted, grown already?
No, what I mean to say is, you're saying, I understand what you're asking. You're asking, every case of kilayim, you're going to be okar it because it's osur. First it becomes osur, then you have to be okar it.
So here also?
No, here it never became osur.
I'm saying, what's going on?
Here it was planted so close together, you knew you were going to uproot it. So it never became osur because you were going to uproot it. That's his point. Okay.
So as if it never existed.
It's as if it was never a vine. That's basically what he said. Right. 15. Let's see if he has something here. By stating, Rav Huna informs us that the intervening vines are viewed as if they were mere detached wood and not vines. Okay. Since the extra vines stand from the outset to be firewood, they're not considered to be part of the vineyard at all, and no distancing is required from them, period. Rav Huna did not simply state that planting next to the intervening vines is permissible. He therefore taught the leniency with regards to the permissibility of training the branches of the vines over farm plants. Okay, there you go. Anything else here? Okay, that's basically it. So that's the big kiddush of Rav Huna. Now Rav Mona makes the following comment: Hadom Masayi Olahi Dom Rav Yosi. This will support Rav Yosi. Said before. Remember, we said Im Hayzroim B'Tok Shisha. If there were, remember, we were talking about in that case where you had two rows of three, and then you had or four, and then you had a row of three which were in between, right? You had three in between the four vines. So it was in the spacing, right? Remember? So we said that if you planted inside six tefachim of the outer row, remember? So in Hoyzroim, Tok Shisha, if there was a row of farm plants inside the six tefach work area of the outer row, Hakol Aser, everything is forbidden. Both the vineyard and the unaligned outer row. Chutz l'shisha, if it's outside the six tefach work area, then gefanim mutaras hakeramutar, the keramasar, that the outside gefanim are obviously mutar because you're out of six tefachim, and the inner rows, which are a karam, those are going to be forbidden. So it's the same principle of Rav Huna. Although the vines of the unaligned row are within the work area of the vineyard, they're judged by their own standard of being single vines, right? Mm-hmm. Things can have their own din, even though they're close to other vines. That's his point. They don't become subordinate to the vineyard. So it's the same idea.
Therefore, you wouldn't be able to treat it in the same way, right?
I'm not sure what you mean. Basically he's saying that the fact that it's close to other vines doesn't preclude the possibility that it has its own halacha by itself. And I think that's the only thing you can get.
This is a chiddush. The outer row, which is closer, they're permitted, but the inner vineyard is us.
Right. So in the footnote, it goes to the next page. This principle corresponds with Rav Huna's interpretation of our Mishnah, that the intermediate vines, though located within the boundaries of the vineyard, are not subject to the distancing requirements of the vineyard itself. Now that's basically what it's saying. All right? I mean, it's pretty straightforward. Now, Memches, Omer Aleph. Now we're going to start a din, which has to do with burial plots. So what they used to do is they used to have, let's just start off with a little hakdama here. So they used to have burial plots that used to have like a cave, I guess, or an underground cave.
Crypt.
It's a crypt as you call it. And they would the way it would be set up is first the size. It's 8x4. So you have 8 amas in depth and 4 amas width. Okay, so that's an 8x4 crypt. How many kvarim can you get in there? So they used to put in 6 kvarim along the 8 amas length and 3 kvarim along the 4 amas width. Okay, so you'd have a total of 19 kvarim. 8 and 8, 8 on each. I'm sorry. I say 2, 4, 6, 12, I'm sorry, 12 and 3 is 15. 15 kvarim in this 8x4 crypt. That's the way it was. Now, what's happening here is you go ahead and you start digging, let's say you have a new field that you're developing, and you start digging, and lo and behold, you discover a body, right? So what's his body doing here? You know, like you know, this. What? So the question is this an old crypt, or is this just a loose, a haphazard body that's buried, that happens to be buried here? So there's a big nafkamina. What's the nafkamina? After you clean up this body, the field would be tahar. You don't have to worry about tumah, because it's just a haphazard body. If it's a part of a crypt, then you've got, you know, you could probably have many other bodies around here, and the whole thing would be like a base oilum, and everything would be tummy. So that's the questions over here. So let's take a look. Let's look at footnote number one, because he gives you the introduction here. One or two corpses, this is Nazir 9.3, Ahalo 16.3. One or two corpses found buried in an area that was hitherto unknown to be a graveyard does not establish the area as a shchunas kvaros, which I'm going to be referring to this as a district. It's called a district of graves. Well, I'm just going to call it the district, okay? Because it reminds me of District of Columbia, which is like a graveyard in a sense. Okay, district. Rather, since there was no previous knowledge of graves at this site, only one or two corpses were found. We assume they were placed there temporarily until they could be transferred to a proper cemetery, and they just didn't get around to it. You know, they ran out of time, they ran out of money, or the wars caused people to get, you know, this happened in Europe all the time. They buried Rebbes in Krakow, you know, in the ghetto with an intention to bury them someplace else, and they couldn't. They never got around to it, and they remained buried there until they were moved later. This allows us to unearth the corpses and bury them elsewhere. In other words, that's another rule. If you had a person that was buried in a base oilum, generally speaking, it's usher to dig up the kever and move him to another place. Because once he's in the place, you know, mesobim kunmei munach, he should just be there, don't move him. It's actually considered a bizoyan to the other people buried there to move him and not them. It's really frowned upon. Moving a kever from one place to another requires a psak from a posek. It's not a pashizach. But anyway, if he's just temporarily buried there, you could move him. Okay. So those are the rules. Okay. If, however, three corpses were unearthed, now you have a, and it's within a space of 4 to 8 amas, then that establishes a plot of land as a catacomb, in which corpses were interred as their final resting place. So therefore, they cannot be unearthed and reinterred elsewhere. Furthermore, since it was found in the area, we must be concerned it was part of a larger forgotten cemetery that contains other catacombs, and their surrounding area must be treated as tame until it's excavated as to verify whether there are other other people buried there. So 4 to 8 amas is the chamber. In the opinion of this Tana, the catacombs of the Tanakh period were comprised 4 by 8, and they were built in 2 8-ama walls, and 3 recesses for tombs built into the 4-ama wall, and that's our diagram. Okay? Now, going to the bottom of the page, Tosefta Olos records a dispute between Reb Shimon and the Chachamim. Here's the case. You found corpses that were found crowded together. Okay, normally they're supposed to be, right? Normally they're supposed to be, what is it, 4 amas apart? What are they? You have three. It's about 2 amas apart, I'm not sure. Yeah, well, let's not worry about how many, how close apart they were. The point of it is you have, instead of three corpses found buried within a 4-ama space, you found 5 corpses buried within a 4-ama space. So that's way overcrowded, right? Much more than you're supposed to have. So, Reb Shimon says, since a catacomb doesn't hold more than 3 corpses and 4 amas, this is obviously not a catacomb. It's not a district, right? But the Chachamim hold, no. We view the intervening middle corpses as non-existent. We look at the 2 extras as if they're not here, and we're left with 3, and 3 within 4 amas is considered a catacomb.
What do you do with those other ones you disregard?
Use them for firewood.
You can disinter them,
I guess. I don't know. That's a good question. All right. So here we. So again. So we have a very, very, as you've gathered, we have a very similar machlokes. It's Reb Shimon and the Chachamim Mamish, exactly the same shitas, right? Reb Shimon says it's evident that it is a catacomb, and the Chachamim are saying Roinus Ha'im Tzayim Ke'iloenam, which is exactly like our Mishnah. It's a perfect match, no? If they're in Tzayim, right? So the Gemara says, here, let's now we can do the whole Gemara very quickly. Shem bar bo b'shem b'yarkin k'shem shem chalukim kan, kach chalukim b'shkunas k'varas. Just like Reb Shimon and Chachamim argue here by Kalayim, they also argue by the graveyard, right? A district. That's his point, that it's the same machlokas. Am Reb Yonah loy damya. No, it's no comparison. Tamon meruvachin uritzofon. There they were properly spaced at the time of the burial. And then subsequently, you were in a rush, right? So you had this 4-ama area. You had 3 people buried there. You really weren't supposed to put another body there, but it was a hot day. You didn't want to work too hard to try to dig a new cover. So you figure it's boiling hot. Let's just bury the guy here, and we'll fix it later, right? That was what he's thinking. So initially it had a din, right, at the get-go, before the 4th guy was put into that crowded area, it had a halacha like a kever. Yesh lan shkunas kfaris. So ritzufin v'rivchan. So the corpses were crowded together, and one rendered them properly spaced by unearthing the extra corpses. In a lan shkunas kfaris, they do not have the status of district kfaris. One second, I don't know if I'm reading this right. Let me try again. There, if the corpses were properly spaced at the time of burial, and you subsequently crowded them with additional corpses, Yeshlahen Shkunas Kfaris all agree they still have the status of district. Since the corpses were initially buried with the appropriate spacing, that is a proper burial ground. Conversely, okay, I missed that word. Conversely, if it was retufin, if it was originally crowded together at the time of the burial, and then subsequently revochon, you made them properly spaced, then ein aleihem shchunas kvaras, then it would not have a halacha of a district, right? Because when they were originally buried, they weren't buried properly. Baram hocha, but over here by klayim, revochon or tzofon, if the vines were properly spaced, and then later you what? You crowded them together by planting additional vines, but machlokas, that's where there's a machlokas. Ritzuchon or revochon, but on the other case, if the vines were crowded together, and later you rendered them properly spaced by uprooting the extra vines, d'v'yakol karam hu, then all agree, even Rav Shimon would say that it is a vineyard, because they're properly spaced at 4 hour intervals. So that's the issue over here. Okay. So let me say that again. So and we'll stop here. So again, it's Ram Hocha. So over here, by the vines, what is it? Miruvachin. If they were properly spaced, Urat Sofon, and then later you crowded them. That'll be a machlokas, that what? That the Chachamim are going to say, that's, we look at the middle ones as if they're not here. And Rav Shimon is going to say, no, it loses its shame of a carrot. Ritzufin, if the vines are crowded together originally, Ritzufin, and then you later render them spaced properly, Diviyar Kol Karim, everybody's going to agree that it's a carrot, because now it's properly spaced. So they're totally unrelated. That's basically it. Montpligan. So what?
By the kever, you look at how it was originally, and by the vineyard, you look at how it is at the end.
Correct. That's exactly. The footnote speaks that out exactly. You got it right on the nose, Tzvi. By the kever, the ikar is the way it was originally, and by the kerem, it's more how it's looked at now at the end. Montpligan. What is the machlokes as far as the district is concerned? Kishbo mutzon ritzufin. Right? Because if they came and they found them together originally, you don't know how they were originally buried, so it's a suffix. Shimon says, I mani, gal nofalin, or it's often that there was some kind of something collapsed on them, and that's why they ended up together. And the Chacham say, muvachin hayu, or it's often that they were properly spaced, and later on, that they crowded them together. And that's the way we'll stop. We'll stop here. Halacha Gemol. Moitzei Shabbos. What time? Moitzei Shabbos. Last week we did 9:50, but then we can go another 10 minutes earlier if you want. 9:40, okay?